And with me is from the Albany Times Union, Roger Hannigan Gilson, the Hudson Valley reporter. How are you doing today, Roger?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We are glad to have you back after a couple weeks off. And you've been a very busy reporter, I guess, in this week back.
Yeah. You know, you got to hit the ground running. There's been kind of a lot of significant stories. The first one has to do with Windham Mountain in the Catskills.
It's just they always hope for snow Thanksgiving weekend to kick off the season, and it rarely comes. Right?
Yeah, no, I was talking to their PR person, and they were, you know, I was like, I know this is weather dependent, but do you have any idea when you might open? They had the snow guns going last weekend, but they were like, you know, it's up to God, really. Yeah,
they need it to be below 32 overnight.
Yeah.
Like for the whole night, I guess, or something?
Well, for like the majority of the night, because if it just like dips below for
which is what
like
it's
an
been
hour,
doing. Yeah.
You know, it's just going to like melt off, and then they're just going to have wet trails, and, you know, that doesn't help anyone out. But, you know, there's hope that, you know, the first weekend will be, you know, around December 1st. But, you know, it's up to the weather gods.
But the changes have started already.
Yeah. So... Essentially, this Wyndham, without much, I guess, warning, started rolling out this new social media campaign, and people reacted with a lot of anger about it, or, you know, certain segments of the skiing population. On their website, one of the initial things, and it was also on their Instagram and stuff, was an employee kind of taking down the sign for Wyndham. And it said, like, say goodbye to the old Wyndham. And then they introduced this new concept, which was Club Wyndham. They did this without, you know, kind of, like, explaining exactly what it would be. So people's imaginations ran left and right on it. But there are going to be significant changes. You will, starting this winter, be able to purchase a membership to Club Wyndham. It is $175,000. And that doesn't include, you know, annual dues.
Which are undetermined.
Which are undetermined right now. I asked Wyndham, and they said they were still calculating what exactly they would be. But, you know, you get ski passes and priority with certain things. That's not to say that you can't just go to Wyndham in upcoming years and just buy a day pass, except for on Saturdays, because that's one of the large changes, too. Essentially, you know, you can't buy day passes for Saturdays from early January to early March. So they're kind of changing things up. There's this Club Wyndham thing. They're hoping to get a few hundred people to sign up for it. It's, you know, very expensive. I mean, best of luck to Wyndham. And then the changes are affecting kind of like the day pass skiers, because, you know, I talked to them and they said they were trying to encourage people to stay at Wyndham Mountain and in the town of Wyndham, which is, you know, a very nice town, for multiple days, which is why essentially you'd have to get a 2-day pass, a weekend pass, if you wanted to start on Saturday.
So it's really the locals that are getting the shaft here with this. They can't buy a 1-day pass on Saturday.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what they're arguing.
Because if you're a tourist, you're probably coming for the weekend, and so buying a 2-day pass isn't a big deal.
Yeah, it isn't, but it kind of discourages people that are local or that are just, like, dodging up for the day. Because, you know, people do that from the city if they're, like, really hardcore skiers. But it's kind of putting a damper on that. And the concerns from, like, skiers, both, like, local and, like, people that just hit Wyndham up regularly, is this was, like, part of them trying to upscale. And this was just, like, the first step. Because with the membership, there's all these amenities that are going to be added on, such as, like, a private golf course, a private spa that, you know, like, the day pass holders wouldn't have access to. But, you know, these amenities haven't been built yet. So, A, it, you know, initially you're not going to be getting, like, a huge amount of stuff for the $175,000. And, B, there was concerns that, like, this eventually will just become, like, a private club. Because in the rollout of this announcement, they referred to Wyndham Mountain, you know, the Wyndham Mountain Club, as a semi-private club. And that just drove people insane.
Because people, especially like people that live in Windham, sort of have a, they feel like the mountain is theirs. It's like part of the community.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of ownership there. You know, Windham is a small place, the town, and then, you know, the mountain is a huge employer and very much part of their life there. You know, there's also construction that's going to be happening on Windham. They're building like condos and single family homes, and their argument, or Windham's argument, is that it would employ additional locals, which, you know, like I believe and is very true.
I don't know. I see these towns, they do FRPs, and then the company that's constructing is from Albany or Ulster County, or, you know.
Well, it's how you define local, yes. I suppose. Yeah, no, that's a good argument. And, like, I'm not sure if everyone they need is going to be within the town of Windham. I mean, like, that would be ridiculous if everyone they need is in the town of Windham. There's only a few thousand people in the town of Windham. But, you know, they didn't define what a local job would
right.
be.
Right, I'm just saying, if their argument is that this is going
to
employ local people and help the Windham community.
Yeah.
It may not really.
Yeah, it may help the broader community.
Hudson Valley community.
Yeah, the Hudson Valley community, but Windham itself, you know, I mean, it's not going to be taking all its employees from Windham.
And then are they eliminating mountain biking, or is that just in the winter? Or because they've built all these mountain bike trails over the past 10 years or 15 years.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on mountain biking, but apparently they're like world class.
Right, they have world class competitions there. The folks in Catskill that opened that bike shop, they're former competing, and they like ran this international competition like 5 years ago at Windham Mountain.
Yeah, no, they're pretty famous. They're getting rid of them completely. Like next warm season, they will
no
not
in
be
the summer.
There.
No
time. At no point in the year.
So the rich people don't use mountain bikes? Is that what we're hearing? Or
well, the argument that Windham made was that it was a very particular outdoor pastime, and that like the average person visiting Windham wouldn't want to go on these like difficult mountain biking trails. So what they said is that they were trying to introduce summertime activities that were more like general interest, and one of these was golf, not exactly as exciting as downhill mountain biking, but you know, more people golf than do the former. And, you know, they are, as like everyone in the Catskills is doing, especially as climate change ramps up, is make it more of a year-round destination. And I think that this was them trying to, broaden the activities and how many people could engage in them in the summer. But a lot of people are very disappointed in that, and even Windham said it was like a very tough decision to do that. But yeah, no mountain biking next summer.
It seems crazy, the investment they made over the years in making those trails, and then what, they're just going to let the trees
grow?
The
woods take over? Yeah, it almost does, because like they're trails and they're already there, so it's not like they're going to destroy the trails.
I guess there'll be hiking trails probably.
Yeah. You know, you could always still hike them. They're not going to like burn the trails, like no one will use them from now.
And I thought Hunter Mountain got similarly bought by an outside company recently, right? The Hunter family finally, or the Slutskys, is that
Slutskys,
what?
Slutskys, yeah.
That owned it, finally sold it like a couple years ago.
Yeah, that happened with Windham and Hunter. Windham is majority owned by North Castle Partners, but then two other wealthy families invested in it this past year. And then, like, yeah, Hunter is part of the Vail family now, I believe.
So it's related to a bunch of Colorado resorts.
Yeah. I mean, Vail is huge. They control resorts, like, all over the place. But it's this, like, movement within the skiing industry towards consolidation. And I was talking to, you know, kind of an industry expert out west. And they were saying that, yeah, consolidation is a real thing. And what often happens is sometimes the smaller mountains will get shut down. But when they are not, they're kind of upgraded. They're upscaled to get, like, you know, a higher degree, I guess, economically speaking, of clientele. And that seems to be what Windham's doing.
And I think, is Bel Air owned by the state?
Yeah, Bel Air is New York State owned.
So that's sort of safe.
They have their own thing.
But they won't get developed into a super high-end thing. That's probably where the public should go if they're getting priced out of Wyndham.
Yeah, Bel Air is more expensive than, I thought it would be. I did an article like comparing the various ski mountains a few months back.
Yeah, I assumed it was cheaper because it was a state thing. It's not.
I don't want you to quote me on this, but like I expected it to be cheaper than it was. But it's a very nice place. Like Bel Air is great, but yeah, they're really protected from industry machinations because it's a state owned, it's publicly owned Bel Air.
And then I guess all these resorts definitely want to increase their revenue in the summer because their revenue in the winter may decrease as the temperatures stay warm and the climate alters.
Yeah. I mean, the problem with the Catskill resorts is, they're not in Colorado, they're not in Canada. They're kind of on the line where climate change is going to really affect them, like whether they get snow or not and whether they can make snow. So part of it might be them leaning into that. There's always just everywhere a real push for seasonal like resorts to become like year-round things because then you can make money year-round, and obviously it just makes more sense in that matter. But they're definitely attempting that. Like, will there be a situation? Like, hopefully this doesn't happen. But if the temperature goes up X amount of degrees and like they just can't operate as skiing resorts anymore, like I don't think they can like create enough other activities where they could still be like the situation would financially work out for them.
And just to double back to Wyndham before we leave this topic, is there any chance that the criticism or local outrage is going to change anything, or are they listening to comments? Or are they?
They are. The same social media team has been running. It's an in-house social media team has been like dealing with all this pushback, and it's been like very heated. And
your story says they are shutting down comments on some posts, and
they
blocked
reacting.
There's a parody Wyndham.
It's Wyndham like idiocy _MTN, and I talked to the creator of that, who great person. It was fun. It was a fun conversation.
So they stayed anonymous. Do they live in Wyndham?
Well, I wouldn't be able to reveal that, but they. Yeah, they had a lot to say, but essentially, like, I talked to Wyndham, and they're like, they absorbed how poorly this rollout was going, so the response was to get rid of a lot of their initial messaging. You can't find it online anymore, but, they also, like, they deleted comments below Instagram posts, and they blocked the one parody account. I also heard that, people would direct message them with, like, concerns about what was going on, and they were, they didn't have, like, a good bedside manner.
So we'll see if anything changes. I guess probably how well these changes do this winter, because they're capping the number of actual people on the mountain, too, right?
They're capping, but, like, that's less notable, because it had been as high as 7,000 before the pandemic. During the pandemic, just because of social distancing, they like put it down and they put it down again to 4,500. They're keeping it at 4,500 because they said the user experience was so much better. But they sliced another 500 off, so the cap's going to be 4,000 this season, which is great for lines,
But maybe not if you arrive at 155 and it's already been capped or something.
No. Then you're out on your butt.
Or heading to Hunter or Bel Air.
Yeah, I'm just like, well, they're close enough.
You've been also, besides up on top of the mountains, you've been down in the Hudson River this week.
Yeah. There's a couple things I did in the Hudson River. There was the barges, which is a whole other issue, but essentially...
And the barges is just temporary. They've temporarily stopped it again, right?
It's not temporarily stopped it. Like,
for like fourth or fifth time in the past 10 years.
Yeah. it's an issue that keeps on coming up, but it keeps on coming up from different angles. Like, essentially what just happened was this minor rule change that didn't seem like anything at first.
That the Coast Guard made, right?
The Port Authority.
The Port Authority.
Well, no, it was made by the Coast Guard, but it affected the
Port Authority.
Like, the Port Authority and what the New York Port was considered. Because it had, like, the Port of New York had been considered everything from the Statue of Liberty to the to Troy, the Federal Dam in Troy. And therefore, the Port Authority, you know, which is a public-private organization down in the city, had control over where things could moor, where things could anchor. But the Coast Guard redefined this, the Port of New York, is just from the Statue of Liberty to the... I'll just say the Tappan Zee Bridge, because that's what everyone still calls it, slash Mario Cuomo Bridge.
Which, who knows how long the legislature is going to let that stand.
Yeah.
There have been bills already, I think.
It's just, you know, people are just going to call it that for, you know, let's see if it ever takes hold. But at any rate, this kind of left open the possibility of barges being moored north of that. And there was pushback from Congressman Pat Ryan and also environmental groups like Riverkeeper. And the Coast Guard didn't kind of adequately address these concerns. But eventually, I believe on the 7th, they rescinded the rule that would have changed the definitions. But they left it open. They essentially said, like, if we make a change in the future, there will be time for public comment and, like, that kind of thing, which really suggests that, like, yes, they've just pushed the decision off, and, you know, this could well be a battle that needs to be relitigated.
Because it was last year that there were thousands of public comments against this,
it's been going on for a while. Like, the biggest thing was the oil barges, which was,
right,
like a decade ago, when they, like, you know, there was attempts to, like, literally, you know, turn the Lower Hudson into, like, a giant parking lot for these crude oil barges. And, like, people had issues with that for so many reasons. It was, like, Bakken crude oil, and, you know, it had to be, like, transferred there, and it was, like, dangerous, and it was an environmental problem, and it was just, like, you know, it would have been a huge eyesore. So, yeah, it's an issue that keeps on cropping up.
And then besides stuff floating on top of the Hudson River, you were also writing about stuff sinking to the bottom of the Hudson River.
Yes, the river bottom. So essentially, you know, the Hudson River is a Superfund site because of GE's dumping of PCBs into the river from 1947 to 1977. This was when PCBs were still legal. They are not anymore because they are they're very dangerous to human health. There was essentially GE was forced by the EPA to dredge the upper Hudson. That is, like, the Hudson in between the Troy Federal Dam and Hudson Falls, like North Albany. And they did this to remove the PCBs. But every 5 years, the EPA needs to review how this remediation has, like, worked in the future, or has been working, rather. And essentially there was the initial dredging, which got rid of, yes, a lot of the PCBs. But then the idea was that the PCB rates would continue to decline at, like, a certain rate. And EPA's own data shows that it's not declining at that rate, and it's
actually
going
up.
Yeah. From the last, like, year of available data, which was from 2020 to 2021, like, the amount of PCBs, like, went up in sediment and in fish. So, you know, the EPA released this data publicly, and then Riverkeeper and Scenic Hudson and other organizations took it up and, like, analyzed it and did not come to good conclusions, and essentially said that the dredging project was not going to plan, which, you know, the numbers seem to suggest. And they don't have any, like, policy suggestions, but they're just pointing out, like, this raw math that, like, this isn't working as well as the EPA wanted it to.
And the EPA is going to put out their official analyzation of the data next year? Is that
Yeah, early next year. They were unable to be more specific than that, but, you know, like January, February, I assume. And Riverkeeper had presented its findings to the EPA, and this is just through Riverkeeper, but essentially the EPA disagreed with Riverkeeper's conclusions about the program, like, not having worked. They were looking at the same data, but they came to different conclusions. So we got to wait for that EPA report to come out and see what they say about it.
Well, everyone can agree that at least removing the PCBs remove them from the river, right?
So you got to remove some of them.
Some of them, right. You can't get everything. And
yeah.
You probably kicked up some PCBs that flowed downriver in the process.
I mean, arguably. I mean, like, they stopped dredging like 8 years ago at this point, though. So I feel that
the dust may have settled by now.
The dust may have settled, yeah. So, I mean, there's I have a couple, like, you know, bar napkin theories as to why the PCB levels might have been rising, but I'm not going to speculate right here. But, you know, it clearly it's not what the EPA hoped would happen. And there's a whole issue between New York State and the EPA, which is the, you know, federal government, because the DEC was attempting to get the lower Hudson also dredged. That's our part of the world, south of Albany to the Statue of Liberty. But the EPA did not bite, and there was, you know, a brouhaha for a couple years about whether the lower Hudson should be dredged. The EPA was never amenable to that, so they seem to be on the GE has done everything they can side of things, so who knows how they're going to address these new findings with the numbers.
And I guess we should remind people that all the experts say that you should only eat a fish from the Hudson River once a month or something, and not if you're pregnant?
Yeah, in the lower Hudson, which is south of Albany, is one fish a month, nothing if you're pregnant or breastfeeding. In the upper Hudson, which is north of the federal the Troy Federal Dam, you're not supposed to eat any fish, like, ever, because they'll hurt you with those PCBs.
And the PCBs are, of course, in the class of forever chemicals that take they were used in part because they take so long to degrade, right?
They do. They're not there's a bit of – I received a contention, an email, like, taking issue with that, actually. They have a lot of difficulty breaking down in nature. That doesn't mean it's impossible.
It's not as bad as PFOA or...
Yeah, like PFOAs and PFAs, that's where, like, the term originated, forever chemicals. They used it at the presentation of the numbers with Riverkeeper and everything. And although they have, like, a huge amount of difficulty breaking down in nature, like, it is technically possible for them. So just to make a distinction, but...
It's one of those terms that's kind of becoming more widely used,
yeah,
and it's not
yeah.
being widely used as the way it was originally.
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, that being said, it's not just, like, you know, a paper cup that'll just rot and dissolve into the surrounding... You know,
you can put a time-lapse camera and watch it.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a rotten apple. Those, you know, the PCBs are going to stick around for decades and decades and a long time.
One other story I wanted to ask you about, because it sort of went under the radar, and the issue kind of is went under the radar, that cannabis stores opened in Hudson this week, and, like,
oh, yeah.
Nobody noticed, right?
It was
the world didn't end.
Yeah, no, I thought people would be, like, firing shotguns in the air, but it's because they weren't, like, dispensaries. dispensaries are still opening, like, very slowly, which is why the state allowed these kind of things to open, which...
they're temporary pop-up shops.
They're, like, pop-ups. There's, like, two ways you can do it. Either, like, a farm, like a licensed cannabis farm, can set up, like, something. And some of them have done this at, like, farmers markets, like in Farmers Market in New Paltz. They had one of these. And the second way they do it is an existing licensed dispensary can open, like, a pop-up. So two pop-ups opened in Hudson. One was from a dispensary in Latham or Colony, around the Albany area. The other one was Manhattan. It's a Gotham dispensary down in Manhattan. And, you know, they're both – I got to walk around the one, the Gotham one. And, you know, it's, like, very nice. And their whole thing is, like, dispensaries still have kind of a furtive kind of gray market feel to them, even though it's 100% legal. So the one in Hudson really throws that by just being this, like, open, like there's light everywhere and like nice wood and just like the products are just out there and people are wandering around shopping. So it's quite nice.
Yeah, it's. I wonder how long it's going to be that you have to show your license like three times where you go into a liquor store and I don't usually show my license.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
there's all these like weird rules that are like put in by the people that think cannabis was like this scary thing. But, you know, alcohol is much more problematic for society, right?
Well, police it's forces. Hard to argue that. Yeah. No, it's, I mean, they're both drugs and, you know, they both have their downsides, but, you know, no one's going to rehab for marijuana.
Yeah. And there, I mean, and just the people that like were afraid to have it in their town, like it opened in Hudson. Nobody even noticed.
Yeah.
I didn't notice until your story ran. I didn't see like one comment on social media anywhere of like, oh, the cannabis store is in on Hudson, you know, like.
Yeah.
There, I haven't seen any outrage. I haven't seen any, like, complaints. No. I haven't heard any, like, I haven't heard anything about it, really.
No, I expected there to be more of a splash. Like, part of it is that, you know, it's been a few years, and, like, people are like, yeah, marijuana is legal now. But, and part of it is that, you know, Hudson is a very kind of progressive place and that kind of thing. But, like, it's just, yeah, it's not as big a deal as one would think. There might be getting a marijuana lounge in Catskill, actually.
Yeah, there was a public hearing on Monday,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there was. I got to check in on that. But, you know, I think it's going to be a similar thing. No one's head is going to blow up because this place might potentially move in.
And on the other hand, all these towns were counting on tax revenue that 2.5 years later they haven't seen a penny of, right?
Yeah, yeah. I can't talk very widely about that issue, but that's sticking in the maw of some, yeah.
But I guess Hudson's going to get a little bit at least.
Yeah, and the county's going to get some months. Too.
Yeah, right.
so, I mean, you know, that's why it was legalized in the first place. Like Denver legalized it before anyone else. Everyone saw what their revenues were like. And then, you know, that's how you win over the functions of government by saying, like, there's going to be more revenue and, like, you know, you can't argue with that.
unless you're maybe in the House of Representatives.
Yes, yes.
Who, you know, I'm not sure what the motivation is exactly.
Functions of government, yeah.
Functions of government, right. All right, anything else? Or you want to tell us what you're, what's coming up in the Times Union this week?
Yeah, I'm about to go off. There's a River Access Forum about a mile from here I'm next going to. It's interesting.
About Germantown or
no? It's like about the whole Hudson River Valley and accessing the river. It's a big deal. But you know, long story short, there's been traditional issues with like residents accessing the Hudson River for recreation, and Scenic Hudson has put together this giant like 600-page report about how people traditionally access the river and how. People may more safely do this in the future with the help of like Amtrak and the Department of State and that kind of thing.
And CSX on the other side. CSX, I mean, there's a freight train on one side and a passenger train on the other side of the river.
It's like a gauntlet of trains
to get to the water. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I asked about Germantown because Germantown's had that issue for years with the train access at that park there along the river.
Yeah, there's actually several parks that have that issue. Castleton on Hudson also has that issue in that, yeah, they this road was closed that gave them access to this park that the town owns, but the at grade crossing was closed down by CSX and Amtrak, so there's this like park they own that no one can get to. So it's an issue up and down the river, and there's going to be people from like Poughkeepsie and Kingston and Rhinebeck and Germantown and Hudson. It's going to be this big event, so I'm going to be checking that out next.
All right, so we can look forward to that. Anything else you want to tell us about, or?
No, that's it for the moment. But thanks a lot for having me.
All right, we are glad to have you back. We've been talking with Roger Hennigan-Gilson. You can read him in the Times Union. The story today is about the. PCBs? Today was Wyndham, right?
Today was the Wyndham story, yeah.
Yeah, the PCB story was yesterday.
That was
and
yesterday.
Hudson River Access will be tomorrow.
Yes.
All right, well, thank you again for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.